The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 1 a.m., January 5th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
These high school boys and girls are having a hop at the local soda fountain. Innocently, they dance. Innocent of a new and deadly menace lurking behind closed doors. Marijuana, the burning weed with its roots in hell.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for spending the next 30 minutes with me, Kelly, and this Resistance Podcast, K, Voice of Resistance. Hope everyone's staying warm. 9 states had to activate their National Guard today. This storm in the east is crazy. The WAPO had a piece saying that iguanas were falling out of trees. It was so cold in Florida. I hope everyone listening is inside in front of a warm fire. Of course, it's America, so people are probably at work. I think everybody deserves a snow day. I hope everyone is at home, bundled up warm.
America needs a vacation.
I think we should have a new law that says we can take at least as many days off as the president. Remember on Christmas Day how Donald tweeted that he would get back to work in order to make America great again starting tomorrow? And instead, Donald spent the next 5 days at Trump-branded golf courses. Last Thursday, CNN reported that when their cameraman tried to get footage of Donald golfing at the Trump International Golf Club in West Palm Beach, that a large white truck pulled up and obscured the journalist. And the Wall Street Journal reported that Donald spent nearly a third of his first year at Trump-owned properties, including 40 days at his golf course in Bedminster, 40 days at Mar-a-Lago, and various others. They also noted that Donald had said that he would transfer profits earned from foreign governments at his properties to the U.S. Treasury this year, but he has yet to provide the tracking information or disclose how much will be transferred.
Of course he's not.
The Daily Beast reported, although many Trump properties are losing business, the Trump Hotel in D.C. is thriving. Donald and his advisors visit frequently and has become a place to be seen and to be seen at for both Republicans and tourists. And the BS quote-unquote blind trust, where Trump said that he would not be involved with the family business. Remember that email from the hotel director that surfaced last week of revenue that shows Donald is very involved still, asking about banquet revenues and demographics? I know this is not new news, but it is important to keep track of and not let things like this become normalized. Once we do, we are one step closer to a permanent backslide into fascistic rule. I have a thought that'll keep everybody warm.
Run.
New York Times reported on a surge in Democrats running for Congress in 2018. So far, Democrats have filed to run in all but 20 districts held by Republicans, while Republicans have yet to field a candidate in 80 districts. I have another good thought for you. Michael Wolff. I am loving every minute of this. The panic, the scramble, the chaos coming from the White House in full crisis mode. If you are hiking K2 the last few days and don't know what I'm referring to, this reporter, Michael Wolff, is releasing a book. A book that is dripping with scandal, palace intrigue, and gory details of the most corrupt and chaotic reality show in town. The White House. Fire and fury inside the Trump White House. Reportedly, based on more than 200 interviews with Donald, his inner circle, and players in and around the administration. The idiot-in-chief gave this reporter full access to the White House. What was he thinking? Hold on, hold on.
What am I thinking? It's Donald. He doesn't do a whole lot of that thinking thing, does he?
I mean... The book is so explosive that Donald and Bannon have broken up and the Mercers have stopped funding the Ban Monster. I'm not going to go into the gory details because, well, turn on the news. It's all over the place. But it sure is fun. Meanwhile, as Steve Schmidt said on Lawrence O'Donnell's show, the world is boiling, and the White House is missing it because the high school gossip machine is more important to them. So anyway, some new news. Wednesday brought us a headline that brought me relief and joy. Donald's heinous, bogus, dangerous, manipulative voter fraud,
voter suppression
commission, was disbanded. I had a lot of anxiety dedicated to this stupid commission, which was banded to prove that Hillary did not win the popular vote legally.
The president tweeted right after the election that he would have won if it wasn't for all of this voter fraud. When he came into office, he said he was going to create a voter fraud commission. That is how this commission was born.
But more importantly, the source of my anxiety was that this commission was there mostly to find ways to suppress the vote in future elections. It was headed up, if you remember, by Kris Kobach, public enemy number one in voter suppression. The commission was facing multiple lawsuits, enough that they finally decided to give up the gambit. Also, this decision comes after the commission grappled with data security concerns and widespread opposition from state governments, including both Democrats and Republicans, who refused to fulfill the commission's wide-ranging request for voter data. The commission was met out of the gate with opposition to its request for states to hand over voter roll information, including names, voting histories, and most controversially, the last four digits of voters' social security numbers. Officials in 14 states and the District of Columbia refused to comply, as they should. And remember, Colorado complied, and voters pulled their names off the list in droves. Yeah. So it's over. Woohoo! Maybe. It has moved to the Department of Homeland Security. Kobach told Politico that he expects Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, to take over the commission's work and start comparing state voter rolls to federal databases of non-citizens. But whether ICE actually plans to take over the investigation or take a larger role in voting, we don't know. At least, in a statement, the DHS spokesman said that Kobach's job in the federal voter fraud case is done. So as for Kobach, if anyone cares, to steal a headline from New York Magazine, his voter fraud panel folded. Kris Kobach turns his attention to ruining his own state. They write, quote, "Although you'd figure Kansas would have had about enough of right-wing ideologues after the disastrous administration of Sam Brownback, Kobach is generally considered the gubernatorial frontrunner. He benefits from universal name ID, naturally, and even more from his opportunity to win the GOP nomination in this very Republican state by a relatively small percentage in what will likely be a crowded field." Unquote. Enjoy, Kansas.
I wish you luck, because you're gonna need it.
Anyway, back to the DHS. Tyler Holton, an agency spokesman, said, quote, "At the president's direction, the department continues to work in support of state governments who are responsible for administering elections, with efforts focused on securing elections against those who seek to undermine the election system or its integrity," unquote. And I'm of the feeling, rock on. Outside of it being a huge waste of taxpayer money, it will occupy ICE's time and distract them from harassing and arresting immigrants. So fine. Have a great time. We know they won't find anything, because this has been tried before.
Documented voter fraud is virtually non-existent. Widespread voter fraud is literally a non-issue.
Immigrants already asked questions about whether they've registered to vote or voted in an American election on their naturalization forms, an application to register for permanent residence or adjusted status, also known as the form I-485. It is against the law for them to register to vote. It's not only a crime, but a deportable offense. I'm pretty sure none of them are risking that. Still, my relief aside, there are concerns about this new move. Election experts and members of the now-defunct commission also expressed concern about how DHS, which Donald has praised for its aggressive immigrant enforcement, will oversee some voting matters and possibly examine unfounded claims of voter fraud. Bob Bauer, who was co-chair of President Barack Obama's voting commission, said, quote, "The question is, are they going to be politicizing the DHS? You wouldn't want to see the same recklessness built into the policymaking in the DHS reflecting the way the commission operated. It's one thing for DHS to try to protect homeland from Russians, but it seems like the Trump administration is trying to protect the American election system from a certain subset of Americans." We will have to keep a close eye on what happens here, because the DHS can be heinous. Following U.S. pushback on Donald's Jerusalem decision, Ambassador Nikki Haley announced the U.S. will cut $285 million from its 2018 and 2019 U.N. budget, vowing to, quote, no longer let the generosity of the American people be taken advantage of. Despite Donald's claims that he has boosted U.S. influence in this first year, we know the opposite is true. He has reduced or altered the country's influence in ways which we will say are, less constructive. This move aside, areas of lost influence include China, which is now leading on climate change, Russia, who has taken over the Syrian peace talks, Germany, and France, effectively the NATO leaders, in leading talks in the Israeli-Palestine conflict. Alright, I have something here that kind of flew under the radar. It's important nonetheless. For only the second time since 9/11, America's defense secretary didn't visit U.S. troops in a war zone in December. Breaking a 15-year tradition, Jim Mattis did not visit the troops in a war zone to thank service members in combat and separated from their families. USA Today explains that Defense Secretary trips historically have been aimed at boosting troop morale, letting service members know that senior leaders and U.S. public recognize their sacrifice. And generals who have chaired the Joint Chiefs of Staff have routinely done their own December trips in war zones, taking celebrities on flights as part of a USO entertainment tour. Things like this matter and are important to stay aware of. Oh, and another break in tradition. As the AP reported, Donald is the first U.S. leader since Calvin Coolidge in the 1920s to end his first year in office without hosting a single state dinner for foreign counterparts. And we can bet close interest will be paid to the first invitation. It'll probably be Russia.
Russian boys, damn, you're right.
In the interest of, fascistic rule, Politico reported on the lack of transparency surrounding Donald's cabinet. Each of the 17 cabinet heads do not release information on their planned schedules or travels, and four provide only specific details. In addition, at least six won't release their appointment calendars or who their leaders had met with, what they discussed, and where they traveled. A potential, in my opinion, a blatant violation of the Freedom of Information Act.
These assholes work for us, damn it!
What are you hiding?
Information released reveals cabinet members meeting with businesses and other lobbyists that they are meant to regulate. There is also concern about hiding policy agendas and taxpayer reimbursement for their travel, which is proven to be extravagant. We have good news, though. There is no climate change after all.
What?
It's true. It doesn't exist. It turns out it was just gay people the whole time. And transgender people. Yeah. Pastor Kevin Swanson clears it all up for us. He closed out his radio broadcast for 2017 with this.
10 textbooks introduced into California public schools that presented pedophiliacs and homosexuals as heroes for 6-year-old kids, 8-year-old kids, 10-year-old kids, and 12-year-old kids. This was the year that happened. It also happened to be the year that God brought the most severe possible judgment on California, at least to this point in California's history, destroying some several 100,000 acres, would have been closer to 400,000 acres, of and tens of thousands of homes, and creating some $180 billion worth in damage. It was the year that California charter schools invited transgender kids in and persecuted kids who used the wrong pronouns for little boys who were trying to turn themselves into little girls, or little girls that were trying to turn themselves into little boys.
Okay, though, for real. We do actually have good news. Despite the idiot-in-chief mocking climate change, tweeting that BS about needing it's a little global warming because it's so cold outside, weather and climate are not the same thing, you insufferable child. Anyway, despite his take on science and all. The Hill reports that 10 more U.S. cities, for a total of 67, have signed on to the Chicago Climate Charter, which requires participating cities to abide by many of the climate guidelines set by the Paris Climate Accord. The U.S. is a big place, and if the majority of the population falls under the charter, we will be well on our way to fulfilling President Obama's vision. And as we are all suffering the effects of climate change, freezing in the east, heat and drought and fires in the west, Donald's Republican administration is proposing to open almost all U.S. coastal waters to oil drilling, including those off of California and Florida, where activists have fought for decades to spare delicate ecosystems from oil spills. And with deregulation, you know there's going to be spills. The proposal released Thursday will go far beyond President Dickweed's April order directing the Interior Department to consider auctioning off oil and gas leases in the Arctic and Atlantic Oceans, as well as the Gulf of Mexico. Instead, the Interior Department is proposing 47 possible auctions of drilling rights in more than 90% of the U.S. outer continental shelf, including Pacific waters near California and Atlantic waters near Maine. The draft plan opens the door to selling leases in 25 of the nation's 26 offshore planning areas. All three governors on the U.S. West Coast oppose expanded offshore drilling, and the East Coast, more than 140 municipalities have lodged their opposition. The governors of North Carolina and Virginia also expressly asked Donald's administration to leave their states out of the new plan. Even Florida's governor announced his opposition Thursday. The administration could even finalize a sales schedule by the end of the year, after multiple rounds of environmental analysts and public comment. Better believe I'll be commenting. Oil industry advocates argue companies need new options beyond the Gulf of Mexico, where drilling has been ongoing for decades. But there's good news. Our states are not going to take this crap line down. In the decades since the 1969 oil spill near Santa Barbara tarred sea life and gave rise to the U.S. environmental movement, politicians and environmental activists have built up ample ways to make it difficult, but not impossible, for Donald's administration to renew drilling off California's coast. In California, where no new federal leases offshore have been approved since 1984. U.S. News and World Report explains that, quote, "For one thing, oil companies know that even if the federal government sells leases in federal waters, California and other coastal states by law control the 3 million 5 kilometers nearest to the shore, all along the coast. That means California decides on permits for any oil pipelines that would connect all oil platforms to the land, along with any transport centers, refineries, or holding stations once the crude makes it ashore." Unquote. Kevin Book with Clearview Energy Partners explains that states simply don't drill off states that don't want them operating, even though there are ways around it by using ships and all, because all the potential financial, regulatory, and legal problems oil companies would face. Of course, this holds true only so far as oil prices stay low. Should Donald take us to war with an oil-producing country, which is likely, then we could have a problem. In 1972, the Federal Coastal Act gives California extensive input on federal actions along the coast, including the granting of federal oil leases. And opposition to offshore drilling in California is bipartisan. So good luck, Donald. Don't wish you the best! Here's an interesting fun fact. A Marist poll found that being a better person was the top New Year's resolution for 2018 for the second year in a row. In the previous decade, losing weight topped the list 80% of the time. And another interesting thing, the FBI Agents Association announced it received $140,000 in donations amid the ongoing criticism of the agency led by Donald. Friends of the FBI agents attacked led for the call for donations on Twitter. Their website reads, quote, "The FBI Agents Association, FBIAA, is the only professional organization dedicated to representing FBI agents. As the voice of more than 1,400 active and retired FBI special agents, FBIAA can state unequivocally that agents are effectively discharging their solemn duty to protect our country from criminals and terrorists." As special agents, we swear an oath of allegiance to the Constitution and to defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. This oath is more than words. It is the tie that binds special agents together for the foundation for professionalism that we must satisfy. The procedures for enforcing these standards are rigorous and effective, and the public can rest assured that the Bureau employs the world's finest law enforcement professionals. Attacks on our character and demeaning comments about the FBI will not deter agents from continuing to do what we have always done. Dedicate our lives to protecting the American people. The true story of the FBI cannot be reduced to partisan talking points. The true story of the FBI is work done by nearly 1,300 special agents and the 2,200 non-agent FBI professionals spread around the country and the globe in 56 offices, 355 resident agencies, and over 600 legal attaché offices connected to U.S. embassies. The true story of the FBI are the partnerships special agents have with state and local law enforcement agencies throughout the country and the over 50,000 law enforcement executives from the U.S. and over 170 countries who receive training at the FBI National Academy. Ultimately, the true story of the FBI is about real results and not sound bites. And the Office of Inspector General's 2016 annual audit made it clear how effective the FBI's work can be in just a single year. Terrorism. 460 disruption of terrorist plots or organizations. Counterintelligence. 133 counterintelligence cases involving espionage against the U.S. Cyber. 250 successful disruptions and dismantlements of cyber threats connected to criminal enterprises and national security activities, together with noteworthy progress towards neutralizing global cybercrime. Criminal enterprises. 22 high-priority drug trafficking organizations dismantled and 72 organizations disrupted, 118 violent gang criminal enterprises dismantled, 1,345 gang enterprises disrupted, and 342 white-collar criminal enterprises dismantled. Unquote. Brava! Brava! Speaking of drugs, our scrappy little leprechaun of an attorney general, Jeff Zamboga Sessions, hates health, fun, and black people.
This drug is dangerous. You cannot play with it. It's not funny. It's not something to laugh about. And trying to send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Shut up!
The little man is coming for our weed.
You suck!
Sessions has rescinded the Obama-era guidelines that ease the enforcement of federal marijuana laws. Obama's policy was not to challenge state laws that allowed medical and recreational use of marijuana, even though pot remains illegal under federal law. In a one-page memo sent to federal prosecutors, Sessions said, quote, "Given the department's well-established general principles, previous nationwide guidance specific to marijuana enforcement is unnecessary and is rescinded, effective immediately." Unquote. Is anyone else surprised that this comes the same week as California legalized recreational marijuana sales? Joining Alaska, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Colorado, Maine, and Massachusetts? Yeah, I thought not. As the Republican governor, Cory Gardner of Colorado, said on Twitter, quote, "This reported action directly contradicts what Attorney General Sessions told me prior to his confirmation. With no prior notice to Congress, the Justice Department has trampled on the will of the voters of Colorado and other states," unquote. In another tweet, Gardner added that he's, quote, "prepared to take all steps necessary, including holding DOJ nominees until the Attorney General lives up to the commitment he made to me prior to his confirmation," unquote. Marijuana is legal now in 8 states, and another 22 allow medical marijuana. Reuters made this point, though. Quote, "The Sessions memo did not distinguish between enforcement against marijuana use for recreational versus medical purposes, but his department's ability to pursue criminal charges related to medical marijuana remains in doubt. Since 2014, federal lawmakers have attached language to spending legislation that explicitly bars the Justice Department from spending resources to enforce cases in states where medical marijuana is legal," unquote. Make no mistake, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions is making this move for one reason and one reason only. He is a racist little rat, and marijuana is his number one tool for systematically sweeping up black people and tossing them unjustly into prison. A few facts from the ACLU. Over-policing. Between 2001 and 2010, there were over 8 million pot arrests in the U.S. That's one bust every 37 seconds, and hundreds of thousands ensnared in the criminal justice system. Wasted time and money. Enforcing marijuana laws cost us about $3.6 billion a year. Yet, the war on marijuana has failed to diminish the use or availability of marijuana. People gonna use if they wanna use. And staggering racial bias. Marijuana use is roughly equal among blacks as whites, yet blacks were 3.73 times as likely to be arrested for marijuana possession. 3.73 times as likely. So, we have a call to action.
Call to action.
Call to action.
Call to actions.
Calls to actions.
Call to action.
Senator Cory Booker, Democrat from New Jersey, has introduced comprehensive marijuana reform legislation, the Marijuana Justice Act of 2017. The bill, S-1689, would 1. Remove marijuana from the U.S. Controlled Substances Act, thereby ending the federal criminalization of cannabis. 2. Incentivize states to mitigate existing and ongoing racial disparities in state-level marijuana arrest. 3. Expunge federal convictions specific to marijuana possession. 4. Allow individuals currently serving time in federal prison for marijuana-related violations to petition the court for resentencing. And 5. Create a community reinvestment fund to invest in communities most impacted by the failed war on drugs. This is a great bill! Call Congress to support this bill. Their switchboard number is 202-225-3121. We must stop Jeff and Boygott Sessions' backwards actions. There is now great urgency to pass the Marijuana Justice Act to legalize marijuana on a federal level. Here is Cory Booker.
And we need to make sure that we are not only making it legal on the federal level, not only moving states to do the same, but to start targeting on not only ending the racial disparities in incarceration and the targeting of poor people, but trying to do what I call restorative justice, finding ways to take communities that have been disproportionately impacted and helping them to heal, helping them to recover from what has been the unjust application of the law. I'm going to continue to push this legislation. I'm hoping that we will work towards bipartisan support. We, the people, must make that demand. We must insist upon it. Marijuana laws have devastated communities, have devastated cities, have devastated families, and have devastated too many lives. Let this be the beginning of demanding that we get legislation, to become the law of our land.
All right, that's my time. Thank you for sticking with me in this episode of K Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download the show at crabdiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. I'm also on citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice and on Facebook, where you can find all the stories I've discussed and more at K Voice of Resistance. If you want to laugh and rage at your liberal progressive news, check out the Crab Diving Podcast with hosts Patrick Vile and comedian Ryan Pfeiffer. 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All right, take care of yourselves out there. Stay warm. And as always, resist.
Resist! This is the end!